Welcome to our Contract Trust conference call. We're not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We're not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. Well, thank you for joining us today. My name is Carol Worlius and my associate Jim Knox, and I have these calls every second and fourth Saturday of the month. These calls are recorded and available on our website, IndicatorInformation.com, IQDCalls.com, and YouTube. As we get closer and closer to our expected event, we thought this would be a good time to review our common law contract trust and why we think it is the best vehicle for you to protect your assets. As always, your questions are welcome. Just star 6 to raise your hand. Now, as currency holders, and I believe most of the people on this call are, we all have a common interest. We are expecting a windfall and wish to protect it from anybody who might want us to part with it and to make sure that your families don't suffer from an estate tax haircut. That's where the contract trust comes in. Title and ownership to property may be held in many different ways in the United States by individuals, trusts, or other agencies of commerce. Since most people acquire their assets over a long period of time, ownership is quite often as varied as the property. The nature of the ownership you have to your property or how you hold title to it is a determining factor of how it will pass from you to your heirs. If the property owner holds the title the wrong way, the ultimate disposition of the assets and the tax consequences may cause the estate plan to fall far short of accomplishing its objectives. If an unincorporated contract trust organization has ownership and title to the assets, then eventual death would not affect the ownership and the title of the assets. This legal entity is a common law contract trust, which would be controlled and utilized by the family members for as long as desired. You can die as a pauper with your family's blessing because they get the maximum benefits from the estate, which was intended, for their enjoyment and welfare. If there are any particular benefits resulting from keeping the ownership and title of the assets in your own name, we have failed to discover them in the course of my research. The only need related to property in this life is control and use of that property. That control can be accomplished through the contract trust using simple operational procedures and relationships. One of the goals of using a trust is privacy. We suggest that you choose a name that means something to you, but not one that others will associate with you. That's why we discourage you from using your surname or a similar name with a business you may have had. You must remember at all times that the contract trust organization you are accepting is not your trust. It is an entity unto itself. You are the trustees only. When it's necessary to discuss the contract trust, simply say you are the trustee, manager, president, treasurer, etc. of that contract trust, responsible only for managing the assets of the trust organization. The trust indenture itself is a contract binding the parties involved to that contract agreement. The trustees possess legal and equitable title to the contract trust assets and are obligated to manage those assets as if they own the assets in their own name. That means the trustee will apply the same rules and conduct of the contract trust organization business as he or she did when he or she owned the property outright. The trustees will never be under the direction of anyone or anything other than the trust indenture and the minutes of the contract trust. Thus, there will never be anyone between you and the money, which is very important. It's also important to keep in mind the fact that the contract trust, like an individual, is due absolute privacy. Therefore, none of the activity of the contract trust through the trustees should be made public. We strongly suggest that you should protect your privacy a little further by using a mailing address other than your residence. Use of a private rental mailbox is a good, inexpensive solution. And let me add here that many of you have domiciled your trust in a different state for tax reasons, and that's all well and good, and we pretty much have to do that. But it's still not a bad idea to get a mailbox in your own neighborhood just for your regular mail. All your business mail goes to that place. You should have as little as possible coming to your home, especially after this RV happens. So unlike a corporation or LLC, the contract trust need not be registered in your state unless you are conducting business. Because it is not recorded, we don't need to check the name for name availability when requesting the EIN. 99.9% of the names that are chosen are okay. As currency holders, we all expect to be working with a host of professionals to help us manage the assets of the trust. These professionals must be familiar with the contract trust and the rules and regulations applicable to the trust in general. They must therefore apply themselves to the study of those rules and regulations before they can do justice to the contract trust operation. They will have to do their homework. And be advised that most professionals are not interested in learning anything new. But if they want your business, and they certainly will, they will have to learn it. No one attacking the contract trust with intent to distort it in any way can be successful if the contract trust organization is properly represented. The contract trust was set up to protect your privacy. Some will claim that you and the contract trust are the same person. This happens when someone claims that you, as trustee, are liable for the actions of the contract trust organization. The same is claimed when you, as trustee, are blamed for the actions of the contract trust organization. Trustees are not personally liable on the contracts they signed as trustee for the contract trust, and you must be sure to properly sign everything, acting strictly in the capacity of trustee and not otherwise. As Jim has mentioned many times on these calls, that is a very, very important limiter, not just on your checks, but on anything you may sign in the future. Let me see. How about anybody have any questions right now? We'll come back in a minute. Okay, Sandy, I see that you're back. Sandy, you have another question?
I just wanted to, the man who has that bad sciatic nerve pain, there is a medicine out that takes care of it like within 2 to 3 days on me, but it's very expensive. I did get my insurance. It's called Horzant, Horzant.
Okay, Sandy, why don't you send me an email? I'll pass it on to Gary.
Okay, all right. Sorry, I thought I didn't know my hand was still up.
Oh, okay. All right.
I didn't.
All right.
Sorry.
No problem. All right, thanks. Anybody else have any questions before I go back? Oh, McKinley. How are you today, McKinley?
Yes. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. What can we do for you?
Very good. Okay, as I've been listening on the calls to the certain gurus, and they're saying that we will not be able to exchange at one bank. Okay, so I'm trying to figure out how do I do the exchange, set the trust account up at the bank so that funds in, funds out. But since I have to go to two different banks to exchange the ZIM and the dong and the dinar, how do I do that?
That is totally opposed to anything that I've heard. What about you, Jim?
I have not heard that, and I don't see why they would want to do that. Everything should be able to be done, actually not at a bank, but at a redemption center.
Well, at an exchange. But they're saying
right.
that the ZIM, by it possibly being, the hole on the ZIM makes it different from the rest, that it'll possibly have to be exchanged in a separate entity versus the other two.
Okay, let me address that real quick, and then Carol, you can add some stuff to it. Number one is these are people that really don't know what they're doing. All the gurus are just, I don't know. I have bad feeling about most of them. There's no reason why you can't do it all in one bank. It's not a bank situation. You're actually going to go to a place where they're going to be able to give you a choice what bank you want to work with. Should they have all the banks represented there? So why would they want to send you to two different places? Because all the banks are represented there. HSBC, Wells Fargo, Chase, B of A, they're all going to be represented there. They have the representatives there. Then you may have to go to another room, possibly, to do the ZIM. I don't think so.
Okay.
Remember, this is simply an informational exchange. You're physically giving them the currency, but it's all done on the computer. It doesn't matter where you're at when you do this. It doesn't matter what account. If a guru is saying that, then he's really not a guru. He's just blowing smoke, as far as I can tell, because if you think it logically through, it's redundant to have to go to more than one bank if they're all the banks are there. It just, to me, it doesn't make any sense. And I think that whoever you're listening to, I wouldn't listen to them anymore. I don't listen to hardly any of the gurus anymore. Fleming and all those guys, I don't listen to them anymore. Because it's been now like 4 years, 5 years, and I'm looking at some of the stuff they're saying, and basically they're repeating the thing they said 3 years ago, but that's my opinion. Carol?
Okay.
I agree from what I'm reading. When you make your appointment, you need to tell them that you have Zim, and send you to this particular redemption center that takes care of Zim and the currency. Everything I've read says you can do the currency and the Zim at the same time, and actually they do not want you to have more than one appointment. They don't want you to go to more than one place.
Okay.
Because that way, I mean, if you do, think about it. If you go exchange a currency, then you can go, you have money, then you can go buy more Zim and then redeem that extra Zim. That's double dipping, and they do not want any of that. So I agree with Jim. Whoever you're listening to, I wouldn't bother listening to them anymore.
That's the only thing that I've heard lately that's actually complicated a very simple situation. So I was just looking for, some more information. As if it had to be done, then how do you do it? But I'm listening to you, so I'll have both things in mind, but I'm hoping it works the way you said it does.
Well, see, the gurus, most of these gurus have this issue where they're a legend in their own mind. They come up with some crap that I don't know where they come up with it. I mean, they must lay around at night and make notes of stupid thoughts and then regurgitate it the next day in an email, and then they watch everybody all jump up and down and get all excited and see all the comments. And sometimes I think they're just entertaining themselves.
I just need an understanding, and so far I have the same thoughts now that I had before, but I'm just looking for some confirmation in my thinking and the process. Thank you.
You're welcome. Just make sure when you go into your exchange you have your abstract, a copy of your abstract, and a copy of your EIN letter. That should be all that you need. Okay?
Okay. All right, dear. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, well, I don't see anybody else with their hand up here, so let's go back to what we're talking about. As in most situations, there's a right way and a wrong way to establish a trust. Most of you are aware that we use a third-party creator to initiate the trust. Note that I said third-party. You cannot be the creator of the trust you wish to create. The creator has only two functions. He or she trades the contract trust certificate units for property of the investor, and he or she appoints the first trustee, typically you. This ensures that the relationship between the creator, investor, and trustee will be kept at arm's length in an ordinary course of business. After the creator has appointed the first trustee to administer and manage the contract trust, he or she then steps away. It's no further interest whatsoever in the trust. You, the first trustee, are then charged with naming additional or co-trustees of equal duties, rights, and responsibilities as you. This co-trustee is generally your spouse. The two of you then name your successor trustees. These trustees have no duties, rights, or responsibility until some event, i.e. the death or absence of a trustee. When choosing a successor, your criteria should include that such person be trustworthy, willing, and capable of doing the job. You may choose as many successor trustees as you like. However, they have no rights as trustee until they succeed to the position of trustee. You can also specify that the successor trustee be of your bloodline. You cannot be your own successor trustee, and you absolutely must name a successor trustee. So just to reiterate, because Jim and I run into this often, you cannot be the creator of your own trust, and you cannot succeed yourself. It's not possible. Once you're gone, you're gone. So you cannot be your own successor trustee, and you cannot be your own creator. So back to successor trustee. Most couples name their children the successor trustees. The children also need to become thoroughly familiar with the contract trust activities and their future responsibility to maintain it. If the kids are minors, you will need to name an interim successor trustee to manage the trust until such time as the children are mature enough to handle it. We suggest naming the children to an advisory board of trustees so they can gain valuable knowledge and experience in managing family activities. And some people have asked me, well, when do you think the kids are old enough? When they turn 18 or 21? Folks, I'd say maybe 25, maybe even 30. This is going to be, for most people on this call, probably a tremendous amount of wealth. And an 18-year-old is not going to be mature enough to handle it. So, you know, they've got to give them some time to maybe be involved with what the interim trustee does. But that person is going, the one that's going to make the decision when the children is old, when the kids are old enough. So we suggest that husband and wife participate jointly in the operation of the contract trust. As trustees, your decisions must be unanimous. You both need to become thoroughly familiar with the contract trust activities and your responsibility to maintain it. And as a convenience, the trustee may elect one or more executive trustees to have the authority to act for and on behalf of all the other trustees. And we do that automatically for you. Once the contract trust has been established, it is important to remember that all business transactions are to be agreed upon and voted upon by the board of trustees, typically you and your wife, or you and your spouse. Then you must document all trust activity with minutes and have all trustees sign and date the minutes. This action assures that the contract trust is kept in force and all trust assets are protected and represents authority for the actions taken. Begin a minute with at a regular meeting with all the trustees present, it was decided, or similar wording. And we have provided hundreds of sample minutes on our website for your use. You must write at least 1 minute annually. Now, your mother loan trust will be used, more than likely used, to manage the bulk of your funds and probably not be making purchases. But you should record that you will be using the services of XXX Wealth Management Company, YYI Accounting Firm, etc. And we also strongly suggest the use of a management trust as well, because that is really going to reduce, especially if you have multiple properties and multiple cards, it's going to reduce bank accounts, it's going to condense things. So you only have one entity to deal with instead of six. We have spoken with many of you who wish to put your houses or even cars into the mother lode trust. We highly recommend against this practice. Real estate and vehicles are potentially high liability items. Putting them in the same basket as the currency or money puts everything at risk. We do provide trust for property other than currency. Book 4, which is on our website, suggests the right and wrong way to convey property, stocks, and securities, and other title property. And, you know, I think as I've mentioned before, Jim has been in this trust business since, what, late 80s, Jim?
I got in started in 79.
Oh, okay. And my husband and I started Indicator in 1992, obviously long before anybody heard about Dinar. So we've been protecting property for a long, long time. So that's my part. Jim, what's on your mind today?
Well, I want to go over some of the stuff you just said. You did a great job, by the way. Something that most people don't understand, it's confusing, is the creator and the investor, the exchanger, and then the trustees and successors. Well, an easy way that I look at this is a contract trust, but it consists of three separate contracts. The first contract is when the creator finds the investor, which exchanges his or her assets into the trust, and they sign, and then they get to issue the certificates of beneficial interest. That's your first contract. Second contract is when the creator then goes and starts shopping for somebody to manage and control the trust, the trustee or a board of trustees. And then when he finally finds that individual, that's the second contract. The third contract is when the trustee agrees and becomes the board of trustees and has the first meeting and declares the trust to be in full force. That's your third contract. So that should be a little easier if you think of it that way. So the creator's got his job, two parts. Get the exchanger taken care of, issue the certificate of beneficial interest, and then go find the trustee. the trustee then has to activate the trust. So you get first contract, second contract, and the third contract. So that's why it's called a contract trust in my mind. And that's how this system works. So that's why you have to have a successor trustee, because as trustee, upon your demise, well, you can't rule from the other side. I'm sure it's been tried, but not happened yet. So you have to have somebody else be there and standing by. And they need to be educated, as Carol was saying. They need to be educated. They need to participate. You don't want you wouldn't want to hand the keys of your brand new car, your beautiful car, to some kid that's never been behind the wheel before. I mean, that would be a disaster. So that's why we say you have to educate people, talk to them, and get it going. So that was the first thing I wanted to talk about. Second is the management trust. I want to emphasize that some more. The management trust is like an escrow company. You can manage multiple accounts. You have a choice to have one account that you pull all the money from and just write a check, like an escrow company. Or you can have the management company have multiple bank accounts within it. Not multiple trusts, just multiple bank accounts. So it's up to you how you want to manage it. And the third things we want to talk about, the trust that we're just getting ready to put out there, is called the annuity trust. And that's where you buy your annuities, like I'm going to do. And we've talked about this a lot. My brother and I both will be having annuities. And so with an annuity trust, it circumvents some of the issues. Most people understand how this insurance policies work. So let me go to that first, and I'll explain the annuity. If you have an insurance policy, life insurance, and a husband and wife, and they each have one, you want to make sure that the spouse owns the other spouse's insurance policy. In other words, if the husband has a $100,000 life insurance policy, the wife needs to be the owner of that. So it doesn't go through his estate, be taxed, and then she gets the remainder. She go directly to her estate. So when the check is issued, it's issued to her, and vice versa. Basically, what I'm saying here is you want to finance yourself. The annuity is going to be basically the same thing. The annuity is going to be owned by the trust, and it will continue past your demise, your personal demise. The annuity trust is going to be able to own the annuity. It's going to be able to pay you whatever you want, but it owns it. So upon your demise, like my brother passed before me, that annuity trust is still receiving money, and I could be the successor, and I could receive that. And we'll go into that in detail later, but right now I just want to highlight that. So that was the three things that I wanted to get off my chest first, and then do we have anybody asking any questions yet, Carol?
Okay, McKinley's back.
Sure, what is it?
Okay, McKinley, go ahead. McKinley?
No, I already did mine. I'm done.
Oh, okay. All right. I will mute you back again then. Anybody else have any questions at this point? Well, my goodness, no questions right now. So go ahead, Jim.
Okay, well,
hold on. There's one right there.
Okay.
All right, James, how are you today?
Oh, pretty good.
What can we do for you?
I was thinking, when you get set up, do you make the name of the checks, or do it come from the bank?
When you set up your trust? Oh, my goodness, we've got terrible feedback there. Are you on a speaker or what?
Hold on. Is it better now?
Okay, let's try it. Yeah, when you go to the bank to open an account for your trust, the checks are going to be in the name of the trust, not your name. You're going to be the signer, but the trust will own that account.
Can you give me an example? Say, once you pay for $2,000 of $19.95, then you go to the bank and turn in some papers or something?
Yeah, we
have them to send money to you.
Oh, I see what you're talking about. Well, we take all major credit cards and debit cards.
Oh, the bank don't need to know anything by indicator?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. That's your business, not theirs.
So the trust, I get the trust from the from you. Then I get the checks come from the trust indicator.
You'll get, if you want to purchase a trust from us, like I said, we take all major credit debit cards. When you get your trust and you're ready to open a bank account, then the bank account will be owned by that trust. However, you might think twice about opening a bank account right now. You might be better off just waiting until you go to your exchange. As Jim mentioned earlier, all those major banks are going to be represented there. Open your account then.
Yeah.
Jim, would you agree?
What I'm trying to find out. Yeah, the bank. Okay, in order to get your checks and not in your name, what's that procedure?
In order to get your check, yeah, go ahead, Jim.
Okay, it's a simple procedure. You go to the bank, you take your trust, your abstract. You take your abstracted trust. You say, I'd like to open an account in the name of this trust. I'm going to be the signer because I'm the trustee, and then when you they'll issue you the account. If you want to buy the checks, get the checks. And when you write a check, it's going to say, let's say it's ABC Trust, just grabbing a name. It'll say at the top of the check, ABC Trust. And it'll have the address of the mail drop that you're using for as trustee, not so much as the one in the foreign country or foreign state, rather. And then you would simply sign the check when you write the check. But you would sign your name, trustee, comma, and not as otherwise. For me, I signed James Knox, trustee, comma, and not as otherwise. That's the limiter, not as otherwise. They can't come against me personally because I'm working as an agent for the trust, not for me. I'm indemnified personally. They can't come after me. They go after the trust, good luck there, but they can't come after me. Does that help?
Yeah, and then I can have, and then I have a, another, when I get the second, if I need a second trust, you said $1,700, right?
$1,695, yes.
Now, I do the same procedure again?
Yes.
Yes, on every trust. You do the same procedure to purchase, same procedure to open the banking account, unless you have a management trust. Now, what we've been talking about lately is because people are saying, well, you don't have to have an EI number from the IRS to be able to open a bank account for my real estate, then one for my car. Well, I have two pieces of real estate. I have to have two EI numbers. I have to have, then I have two. Oh, I have to have another. No. You have, with a management trust, is like an escrow company. See, here's the deal. When you write a check to pay for your house payment, it goes to an escrow company, and they break it down from there. Some of the money that goes into reserve account for your insurance, some goes in reserve account for your taxes, and then some goes directly to pay the principal and some to the interest. So it breaks it down. One check, and they break it into four parts. That's what we're talking about here. A management trust is just about that. So the management trust can have a dedicated account, if you so choose, for each of your cars and each of your pieces of real estate. Or you can have one account, and you just, when you write the check, you put a note down there. There's always a place on the left of the check to put a note for what it's for, my Rolls Royce, my Bentley, my mansion, whatever. You just put a note in there. And then you go and you have your accounting system. When you write the check, you put the check number. This could be an Excel spreadsheet like I use. I put the check number, who I wrote it to, and what account is being drawn from or for, and then the data sent the check. It's a very simple system. And we find that too many people try to make it way too difficult. It's not. You can do it any way you want to use. I just use the Excel spreadsheet. And I was, talking to Carol Day, and I said, well, this is the bills I got this month, and this way I write, It's all done. I know exactly what bills are going to be for the month. And when they come in and they're paid, then I put the date and the amount they actually paid for it. That's all I do. So we try and keep it as simple as possible. Remember, once you get this gift of the wealth from this, you may want to hire somebody to do all that. And they'll know how to
probably
do it.
Probably.
So does that help? Am I on the right track with you?
Yeah, that's a baseball player to, you know, figure out. So when you leave the bank or when you go to the bank, the first thing you do, you present your credentials because you have a account there already. And do I ask them to get me a cashier's check if I want to deposit that way also?
Yeah, same thing. So if you're going to make a deposit into the trust account, you if it's a check, you endorse a check, and you put your own. I always write the name of the trust on the back of the check, no matter what it says in the front of the check, so they know that I'm cognizant of it. I put, whatever my trust name is. I sign my name on the back, and again, trustee, not as otherwise. Always use that, because that indicates to the bank and anybody that would come after you that you operated in an official capacity for the trust, not in your personal capacity. So if they're going to, get persnickety and maybe won't even want to sue, they're going to have to go after the trust. Well, good luck on that one. And they're going to, they can't touch you. And so you're indemnified. It's a really simple procedure. It's like a corporation. When I had a corporation years and years ago, it's basically the same thing. It was just one account, controlled everything, and I signed as president. I don't think I used not as otherwise back then, but I signed as the president, because I was. So it's the same thing. So you can actually read any book about how to manage the banking account for a corporation. It's basically the same thing, just change the words from president to trustee. But, in our trust system, you can be the president of the trust if you're so inclined. So there are those things available to you also.
And I do the management trust go. That's a management trust?
Yeah, there's the 1695. And that's, you only need one. You don't need to buy a bunch. You just need one. But what this does, it keeps all of your expenses down, controlled, one account, one company, and nobody sees the motherlode trust. Nobody sees the real estate trust. Nobody sees the automobile trust. They see a management trust, and that's all they see. So it's kind of like your first step of defense. They're going to have to go through that one to get the other ones. They'll never make it through, trust me. But the way I've set mine up is I have one company that has a management trust, and I have I have five accounts in it right now, and it pays for all my bills. I have two vehicles and some other stuff. So that's how I set it up. It's
now
pretty simple.
Each one of the accounts, it got different names, or it's just the original name.
Well, what it does, the way mine is set up, on the check, mine is set up, I have my management trust, the way the bank set up is Wells Fargo, it says everyday account. I don't know why it says it, but it does. It says everyday account on every one of the accounts. And I just make a notation on the check for what is paid for, and I put it in my spreadsheet. It comes from one account, and for some reason the Wells Fargo lists everyday account, and I didn't want to change it. I loved it because it's very ambiguous. Nobody understands what it is. And I just write the check, and it doesn't say anything. My management company has its own names, but it doesn't show up on the checks. It just shows this everyday account. I think everyday account. So it depends on how you set up with the bank. That's why I have one management company, but it's got four accounts, and I have four account numbers, but they all say everyday account on them. I don't know why they do it, but I wasn't going to argue. It's very ambiguous. I loved it. You can tell your bank how you want that.
You will go to the private banker and let them know, or the wealth manager?
Well, yeah, you will at that time. Right now, we don't have wealth managers because we're not at that stage. So I go to my private banking. He's not a private banker. He's just a banker that I do business with, Wells Fargo guy. I've been doing business for 4 years. Went in here not too long ago, said I need to set up an account for my vehicles. I'm using this management trust. Went through, set it up the account. Then he opened four checking accounts in that. It's called everyday checking. Everyday checking, not everybody. Everyday checking. And they all come out the same. And that's how he set it up, because he knows I want something very ambiguous. He knows what I do. He knows what I do for a living. And my relationship with them is pretty good. When I go in, I just take the abstract, and, you know, 4 minutes, 5 minutes later, the account's set up, and out I go. I mean, the guy is phenomenal. And, but, you know, they've been working with me for years. So that's how it worked for me. So, but when you get the wealth, you will have your wealth managers. It's pretty much up to you to listen to them or not. They may not give you great advice. I don't know. I don't think about them yet. You need to pay attention to what they tell you. Then you need to make your own decisions. Don't let them guide you down the wrong path. But yes, once this is set up, the wealth managers. Now, they call it the home office, I think. Isn't that what they call it, Carol, the home office?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So this thing is going to be called the home office. And it's going to be like a concierge system, as I understand it, where no matter what you want, they'll take care of it. You need your house clean, they'll arrange for it. Your yard clean, they'll arrange for it. You need tickets, they'll arrange for it. You need to, you know, flying someplace. It's the same with your bills. When you get ready to get your bills paid or you want to buy something, you will have a phone number or text or email, however you set it up. And let's say you go shopping for a car and you see the car you like. You know, you put a hold on the car and you contact your wealth manager by whatever means, and they will then call the dealership, make arrangements. They'll transfer the money. You'll sign the documents as trustee, and you'll drive away. That's how your life's going to be in the near future. It's just go find what you need, call your wealth manager, your home office, whatever you're going to call it, and they'll take care of everything. That's what they're being paid for. And they do cost, I'm understanding, between $25,000 and $50,000 a year.
That's a bargain.
It's a bargain. It's worth it. That
you
helps you.
How much will it cost? You said how much a year?
Well, $25,000, $50,000 a year is what we're hearing, but they take care of everything. You'll pay that in labor if you do it privately with a CPA or a lawyer. And one thing about as we understand, the home office already has CPAs and lawyers on call to help you, and that's included in the price, as I understand it. So it may sound like a lot of money up front, but when you're trying to deal with all these big things and take care of your nonprofits that we're all going to have and doing this and doing that, I don't want to do it. I want to go out and have fun. I want to go sit on my boat and drink martinis. Manage this thing. You know, that's not my job. Now, my job is to get it created. It's their job to do the details. It's kind of like I manage all of the major decisions. They manage all the minutiae, all the little stuff that I don't want to do.
There you go.
I'd rather sit on my boat.
Does
that help, James?
That clears the air. Well, I was going to ask you, you have to pick your own CPA, or do you make sure that if you sign an NDA,
they will sign
one? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about that the other day, right? So what they do, James, is when you work with the home office or your wealth manager or whomever, they're going to be involved in the NDA. And if you go do business on your own with your CPA, you want to do your own CPA or your own attorney, they need to sign an NDA. Now, even though here's a little tidbit that I know is true. It's not common, but it does happen. There's this thing about client privilege with an attorney. That's a one-way street. Most people don't know that. If you have your attorney sign an NDA, as I understand it, he signs one with you. If you get to court and for some reason the judge is trying to get the attorney to tell him things and threatens him, he can tell the judge, you can't force me to break the law. I have a non-disclosure agreement with my client. In addition to the attorney-client privilege. So I've got one with the one I was using. He's no longer around, but I did that. And when my CPA was still functioning, he retired, he signed one. Anybody I do any business with signs one. It's very important to make sure you have
one.
The bank is going to be under that. Yeah, see, as I understand it, at the bank, when we go in exchange, you're going to sign an NDA, they're on that. They can't tell anybody anything either.
Oh, okay.
That's how I understand it. Now, be sure that you tell these people that you want that mother-load trust not to be used for training purposes nor to be on the main screen. In other words, right. If you go to the bank, you don't tell them this, and the teller is going to get some money out of the account. She'll see all your accounts. And she sees one of like 7 or 8 digits all in there. Do you think she's not going to mention to her friends and family, man, I've had this guy today, $70 billion in the bank. You don't want that happening. So if they don't see that, they won't talk about that. So make sure you tell the bankers, I don't want that screen, the mother load, on the main screen. What I'm going to do is tell them, I don't want the mother load's trust to be known by anybody but me and the wealth managers. I don't want it on any computer anywhere. And when I want to move money, I will physically come to my wealth manager, and I will move the money to my accounts, from account to account, mother load trust. I'm going to be that anal about the whole thing. I want to have complete control where that money's going and where it's at and who sees it. Because this day and age, with the electronic age, you don't know exactly who's seeing what. You got to control that.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, I sit back and listen to the call. I just had a couple of questions on my mind. Appreciate for answering them.
Okay, thank you, James. Okay, we have a caller from San Diego. Last three numbers is 840.
It's Raul.
Hi, Raul. How are you doing today? Yeah,
okay,
I'm here.
Okay, Carol. Hi, Jim.
Yes.
Hello.
I have two questions. Jim, you talked about the mother load trust that's going to be well protected. Then you have a management trust with different accounts. Are those accounts actually different trusts, like automobile trusts and real estate trusts?
Well, yeah, they would be. So the management trust is a trust, and it does manage the money. So let's say that you want to buy a car. Well, you don't need to get an EI number for the trust if it's not doing banking. It's a private thing. So you just title the car to the trust, like mine. Mine's MBZ Company, and I called it company to deflect. And so my car is owned by MBZ Company. My management trust has an account and is notated as MBZ Company, but doesn't come out as MBZ Company. And just as everyday checking. And so that's how I set mine up. So when you have your management trust, you can have separate accounts, like one for MBZ Company, one for ABC Company, whatever. Or just one account, and you just write checks out of that, and you make notations, like I said, with a spreadsheet and on the check for what account it was paid for. For my, for example, my 2021 Bentley, so it's noted on the check, that that's what that was paid for. But, whatever.
Okay.
You can, however you want to do it, it's private. You do your system that works for you, and the wealth managers will work with you on how you want it done.
Okay, because in various previous recordings or previous Saturday meetings, I heard about an automobile trust and a real estate trust. Are they actually necessary if you're just going to designate them as different accounts?
Yeah, you still want to – do you need a trust for a car? Do you need a trust for a house? Yes, because the liability is there.
But they would be synonymous with different accounts. In other words, you're talking about accounts and real estate trust and automobile trust is one and the same. Is that what I hear?
Well, no. The real estate trust, let's back up 2 steps. Car is in a specific automobile trust. The house is in a real estate trust. You don't have an EI for either one of them, but you still want to do banking with them. So then you assign the management trust. You say, I want to be able to write checks to pay for the car and the house. You have a choice. You can do it through one account, or you can have a separate account within the management trust. So my management trust has multiple bank accounts, not multiple trusts, not multiple entities. It's just one entity with multiple accounts in it.
Okay. Because I do have a management trust, and I do have a mother load trust, and I have an agreement between the two.
Exactly.
So when this thing happens, I decide what I want to do, whether I want to buy more trust from you guys, vis-a-vis real estate and automobile, or just make different accounts to take care of whatever I want. I mean, am I being clear about that?
You're wrong on that. I'm sorry to say it that way, but you're wrong. Because if you have a car, here's a prime example of a car. Okay, think this one through, folks. You're driving down the road, two-lane road, you're coming at a car at 55 miles an hour. Car's coming at you at 55 miles an hour. You may pass that car and be less than 10 feet from their door as you go by at a combined speed of 110 miles an hour. If somebody sneezes the last second, that's going to get really, really painful. Okay, they steer into you, you have a wreck. Your
right.
car is your highest liability issue out there. You want to make sure that car is in a trust because that is your highest liability. The second highest liability is your home. People come visit, they fall, you get sued. And here's another little thing that most people don't understand. If you run any type of business out of your house and you have a standard homeowner's policy and somebody comes to your business, to your home, to do a little business with you, and they fall, that policy will probably not cover that accident. You need to have a rider on your homeowner's policy. I don't have a home. I'm living in a rental. I have renter's insurance with an addendum of business. So my renter's insurance covers the house if it catches on fire and also all the liability if somebody came to do business to me and fell in my house.
Okay.
So that's why we put the house in a trust. So you're indemnified. They can't attack your mother load trust. They only attack the real estate trust. They can't attack you or the mother load trust if you have the car in a trust. They can only attack that trust.
Okay.
So that's why trusts are extremely important, to have every entity in a separate trust. Don't put two cars in a trust. Put one car in a trust. Because if you crash one car, you'll lose the second car. Same with a house.
Each house, its own trust. Each car, its own trust.
But you don't have to have
question?
An EI number for them. You don't have to have an EI number, so you don't have to go through all that hassle. But you do have to have the trust.
Okay. Now, what about the NDA? When you are there at the exchange, you're going to sign, everybody's going to sign an NDA. Would you ask them for copies, blank copies of the NDA, so when you go to the financial planners, the different accountants, so they could sign the NDA as well?
That's a good question. I don't know, but I think I'll do that. I think that's an excellent idea. Rule, I'll write that one down. That was a good one. Yes, I would do that. I would get a copy of it and start handing it out, make everybody sign it, if they don't already have one in there.
Oh, there's already one in the III, your website, right? There's already one there, right?
Not yet.
Yeah, we're working on that right now. The NDA, I'm thinking, give me a second here. The NDA, when you sign that, should encompass you, the bank, and all of the trustees in the trust. I think that's how they're going to do it. And so each individual in the trust is going to have to sign it also. Maybe not at that meeting because they may not be with you, but they'll give you X amount of hours or days to get that signership back to them. I'm thinking this through.
Okay.
I think that's why they're going to have to do that. And you're going to get a copy of it. Worst case scenario is you scan it and do an optical character recognition software and, turn it into a Word document and then take out some of the stuff you don't want and use it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But yes, you need to have everybody involved in this NDA. And then one of the reasons why we haven't put one on there is because we know that the NDA is going to come out. We know it's going to be pretty strong. We may just wait until we get that from everybody or from them and do a real good one, because we don't know how strong it's going to have to be. We just don't know. Again, my famous saying, everybody laughs at me, we don't know what we don't know, so we really can't get prepared until we see it.
I see. Well, I get it. It's loud and clear. Thank you very much for explaining that. And Carol, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That is the end of you. You bet. Bye bye.
All right. Thanks, Earl.
It's always a pleasure.
And we have. Okay, we have one more coming up, Jim.
Sure.
Victor, how are you today?
Hi. How are you?
Well,
if I had a quick question. I wanted to buy my son an annuity. Now, do you have to pay taxes on those?
It depends on how you set the annuity up. It can be a situation, as I understand it, because everything's changing. Shoot, everything is changing. The new financial system is going to change everything. As I understand it, you can have it where it's tax-free if it's structured properly.
Okay.
But to, you know, to the annuitant, but the annuitant in this case is the trust. Now, when the trust pays the child, then he may have a small tax liability. Small. Won't be much. But I don't think there will be a tax on that in the very near future. I think within the next year or so, we'll, our tax system is going to change drastically, and I don't think we'll have an issue with that. That's my opinion from everything I'm reading, because I don't think, you know, we know that the existing banking system is going to go away, and we're going to have real money instead of currency. And in that situation, the IRS will go away because the IRS is a collection agency for the Federal Reserve System. That'll go away. And then the original government of our country was operated under excise taxes, not income taxes. Excise taxes are paid on imports, exports, things like that, and that'll affect you and me.
Okay.
So I think that's what I'm about to.
Okay. How much are your annuity? Or
annuity trust?
Say, yeah.
Excuse me. Annuity trust? Carol, take over. I'm coughing.
Yeah, it's $16.95. And Victor, we don't sell the annuities. We sell just the annuity trust that's going to own the annuity. Just to make that clear, we're not in the insurance business.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
I got you. Yeah, because a few weeks ago, a young lady from Primerica, she was trying to, you know, get me to buy a annuity a trust, you know, but I wanted to wait until I exchanged first because I wanted to, you know, get a annuity a trust and a common law trust through you guys.
Okay. Well, and that makes sense. There's not much point in buying an annuity right now unless you can really afford it. And
exactly.
If you do it later, then you'll be able to afford probably a little more, and you can then put it into a trust. I wouldn't worry about it until you've exchanged.
Okay, great. And one last thing. Now, is a CFO different from a wealth manager?
I'm sorry?
A CFO, what is it?
CPA?
No, a CFO is a certified financial officer of a major entity.
Right.
Yeah. No, you'll deal with those, and they will probably be doing a lot of your high-end financial suggestions and co-managing with you, getting you the right deal. But a CFO is going to be somebody that's going to structure the bigger things, the bigger deals. If you're going to go out and buy a 100-unit apartment building, and you're going to use it as an investment, that's when that type of person steps in and helps out. So that's what that's about. I've seen those before, and I've dealt with them. So, yeah.
Okay. Now, they're different from a wealth manager, right?
Well, they work with this wealth manager. They're a division of a wealth managing company. Wealth managers generally are not CFOs. They're just the worker bees. But the guy that makes the big decisions and protects you, as I understand it, does have a CFO title. It's like a commercial real estate agent has a different title, and they go through a lot more training than just a standard real estate agent. So that's what that is.
Okay.
It's just somebody that is in there that's went through a lot more training and has a little more information, education, and experience.
Okay. I got you. Okay, well, I appreciate you guys so much, and I agree with you guys 100% on these gurus, you know, that's thinking they're legends and whatnot, you know, and the majority of them, 99% of them are goofballs, I think.
We totally agree. They are legends in their own mind.
And exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much, and God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you. Thanks, bye-bye. All right. Here we got another. Okay, Linda.
Good morning.
Linda?
Good morning. Yes, how are you? Fine, how are you?
Good.
So on that annuity, on that question on annuity, if you sign like the beneficiary of your trust, wouldn't that be better? Because it'll go directly to the trust?
No, no. There is no beneficiary in the trust. That's a statutory trust. No,
that's not what I'm asking.
Okay.
He said he had an annuity somewhere else, not a trust, annuity. So on annuity, you can sign a beneficiary.
Oh, okay. I see. You can assign a beneficiary to the annuity, yes. In this case, it would be the trust.
Correct.
So then the trust writes the check to your son, or they would normally be called an annuitant, but in this case, the trust is the annuitant. So you would write it to whoever you want to receive the money. So, okay, in this case, we could use the word beneficiary. The beneficiary of the annuitant would be the child, for an example. Yes, you can do that any way you want. Now, the reason I want everybody to understand that the trust owns the annuity is, let's say that, God forbid, something happens to the child, and the child's no longer with us. Well, if it's in the child's name, it goes through the child's estate, it's taxed, and you get the balance. If it's in the trust, it continues to pay because it doesn't know that the child is no longer with you, and you can assign it to somebody else, or you can give it to charity or whatever you want. So we're trying to set it up to where you don't have to worry about that situation should it happen, that money is going to be taxed. That's why I suggested you own your husband's policy and he owns your policy in life insurance. That way it doesn't go through their estate, be taxed, and then you get the remainder. That's crazy. You want the money coming directly to you. Does that help?
Yes, but if it goes to a child and they're underage, what they do with the money then?
Well, whatever you want. I mean, let's say that the child is 10 years old. Okay, you got the annuity. It's coming in. The money's coming in. You give the child a nice allowance, whatever you decide, $100 a month or whatever you think. But the annuity money can pay for all the child's health, welfare, benefits, everything, food, clothing, whatever you want to do with it, whatever you want to do with it. But the reason you want the annuity is generally for, like my brother's 60-some-odd years old. I'm 67. I think he's 61. And he's got some serious health challenges. And I don't want to have to worry about him taking care of all this stuff. So I'm buying him an annuity through his trust. He has an annuity trust. And then he will actually have a debit card from that trust, and he'll use it whenever he needs it, you know, for whatever amount. He'll be allowed to pull out X amount of dollars because that's governed by the bank account per month. That's how we set this thing up. So for an adult, it works out real well. For a child, it's for the child's future. So if you want to set the annuity up, now you've got money for the child's education, and then the balance could be like the child graduates from college and decides to go get married. Now you've got a lump sum for them and some income for them, so they don't have to worry about, you know, getting a job right away, enjoy the honeymoon for a year, you know, things like that. The whole idea is you want to have a system in place to get your money without having all of these headaches, you know, worrying about it. And that's why I'm doing it for my brother. He's
okay.
You know,
I understand what you're saying, but my question still wasn't answered. Now, the annuity is in a child. The child is underage. Now, if the child died, which is the beneficiary, now what happens to that?
No, the child is not the beneficiary. The beneficiary of the annuity is the trust. It's paid to the trust, not the child. It's not in the child's name. You put it in the child's name in your mind. It goes to the trust. The annuity is paid to the trust. See, by law, the trust is considered a person. If you go to the Internal Revenue Code, this is going around in circle, but it's going to come to answer your question. You go to the Internal Revenue Code and you look at, I think it's 7704B, definitions. A person is a corporation, trust, or other entity. So a person is a corporation, trust, or other entity. Trust. So the annuitant is the person, which happens to be a trust in this case. The money goes into the bank account for the annuity, the trust, and then you pay from the bank account to the child, however you want to do it. Now, when the child is of age of ascension, 18 or so, or whenever you decide, you can let them have control of the account. You can take them to the bank. There's a bank account set up with this thing, and you put them on the account, and they can do whatever they want with the money. That help? Am I on the same page now with you?
No. I said if the child passed away.
Yeah, so it right, still goes to the trust.
Yeah, because the trust never dies. The account for the child is separate.
Okay, so it's in the trust, and the child passed away, then the next person in line that's in the trust will inherit the money.
Okay,
correct?
If you want to do it that way.
Yes
and no. The money comes to the annuity, to the trust. You're paying the child. You did to figure out who you want to pay. You don't have to give it to the child. You can give it to somebody else. You're the one in charge of where the money goes. It's just the deal is the annuity's paid to the trust. All the money comes there. You get to pick who it goes to. You could have one annuity for three kids. You could have one annuity for one kid, the second trust, annuity trust for another kid, however you want to put it together. It simply comes to the trust. It's up to you to figure out who you want to pay it to. So when the child passes away, it dies, you could, give it to charity or pay it to anybody. It comes to the trust, not the child.
Okay, I understand now.
Okay. Thank you, Linda. That was a good question. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Linda, because we got it was a round robin answer, but we got everything done, and it was educational for everybody. So that was a good question. Thank you.
I think so. Well, Jim, seeing that you're talking about annuity trust, didn't you and I discuss a little special?
Yeah, I think we did. I think what we said was we was going to give 25% off on this annuity trust for, 10 days? Is that what we agreed?
Yeah, 10 days. Okay, how about 15 days? We'll make it the 25th.
Okay, so from now to the 25th, if you decide you want to get an annuity trust, and normally there's $16.95, and now they're, 14? What was it, Carol? 14?
I think that's what you figured. Let me see. They're 25% off. So.
Yeah, and I don't have my note in front of me. I'm sorry.
I'll figure it out.
Oh, here it is. It's $12.75.
Okay.
I found my note.
There you go. Okay. So annuity trust, if you decide to get one in the next 15 days, is just $12.75. There we go.
Yeah.
Anything else?
For me?
Yeah.
I've always got something else to say, you know.
Well, I know. We could go on for hours, but it's already 5:01.
Well, then I'll just shut up then. But, yeah. This has been a great
Does anybody else have any questions before we go? I agree. Anybody else have any questions before we go? No, apparently not. So, as James mentioned earlier, our trusts are currently priced at $19.95. Annuity trusts are $12.75 for the next 15 days. We accept all four major credit and debit cards. And we also pay a $300 referral fee. So if your trust is fully paid for, which most of them are, and you refer somebody, you get $300 discount. So that's usually a pretty good deal. We're very happy to do that. Very happy to make that payment. So, Jimmy, you want to add your contact information?
Well, before I do, I want to say one thing. Thank you very much, McKinley, James, Victor, and Linda, for the questions. They were excellent. All right.
Yes,
I'm in the West Coast, and I'm in Oregon temporarily. This place is being burned to the ground. I'm getting out as soon as I can. I work Monday through Friday, 9 to 6. I don't work weekends. I do, but I don't want to take calls on weekends. Usually it's my time to catch up on all my paperwork. Errol's such a slave driver, folks. You wouldn't believe how much work. So anyway, my number out here, I'll give you my 800 number. My number here in Oregon is 866-341-6907. And my email address is security@indicatorinformation.com. com. And, Carol, I think that's all I got to say.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. So thanks to all of you for your time and attention today. And, again, as Jim mentioned, those are great questions. My name is Carol Werlius. My number is 877-333-5018. I'm available between 10 and 6 Central Time, also Monday through Friday. I mean, this is – Jim and I try to keep Saturdays to ourselves. These calls we do on Saturdays, but after this, you know, I'm going to go out to lunch. Anyway, the best way to reach me is by email, info@indicatorinformation.com. Have a happy and safe weekend, everybody, and go RV. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.